Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Tuesday, June 25th. I'm Ray Graff. Following the official arrival of summer last week, which brought a weekend of sunshine and temps around 80, we talk weather on the show today. And here to do that is meteorologist Jason Goff, formerly of News Channel 13 at Albany. He now runs a forecasting website at jasonsweather.com. If you have a question about weather, whether it's nice weather, whether it's hurricanes, tornadoes, snowstorms, whatever, give us a call. The number is 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551, or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. Again, the number is 800-348-2551. Meteorologist Jason Goff is here. Your weather calls coming up on Vox Pop right after the news. Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. We're joined today by meteorologist Jason Goff for a discussion about the weather. Formerly of News Channel 13 in Albany, Jason's forecasts have been broadcast in this region for a long time. He now runs a forecasting website at jasonsweather.com. The number to call if you have a weather question, 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. You can also tweet us at WAMCVoxPop, or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. But the number is 800-348-2551. Jason Goff, welcome back to the show.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate that. I'm looking at my radar. Radar Scope, by the way, great weather app for these radar pictures. There's almost a perfect line of rain separating New York and Massachusetts. It's pretty wild to look at. So all the rain is just out of New York State, with the exception of about Southern Columbia County, head over the Berkshire Spur, and that's it. Anyway, I digress. I was just checking that out. Fascinating stuff.
Sun finally came out here by Spacious Studios.
And it got
here
a little steamy, too.
It is. It's muggy. All right, so let's play before we get into first, let's find out what's going on with you, and then we're going to play a game.
Okay.
Something going on with the Times Union.
Yeah, it's been great. I actually approached Rex Smith and said, hey, man, I have this whip. It's just a hobby, jasonsweather.com.
Yeah.
And I'll be happy to help the Times Union out. The funny thing is that I've been working my whole life. My first job, I was 11 years old, and I was a paper boy for the Times Union.
Yeah, so throwing it on other people's lawns and such.
Absolutely.
Yes, I remember you.
And or through an occasional window, maybe.
Right.
But no, I never did that. So I just thought, hey, that'd be kind of neat. And they didn't have any real sort of consistent weather coverage. And now with everything, kind of transitioning over to online stuff, it gives the Times Union an opportunity to kind of boost their online weather presence, and I offered to help them, and we have a good little partnership going. Some more things to come, but we're going to be covering the track, which is great, and I'm looking forward to that.
Oh, really? You get to go to the track?
I've been up there once or twice.
Yes.
And we'll have daily forecasts and some other things that we're going to be adding to TimesUnion.com.
Oh, this is
coming
great.
Up. So I'm really excited about it.
And if they want to find you on the Times Union, how do they do it?
It'll be right on the page, with the latest headlines.
Yeah.
There'll be a synopsis of my forecast there, and then again, they'll point directly to jasonsweather.com. You can go there, and man, I've been adding so much stuff to that site.
How is the site doing?
It's been doing great. I mean, I'll put recipes on there.
Recipes?
Especially this is now, we're in grilling season.
Oh, yeah.
And I've partnered up with a few charities that do fundraisers. Joyous Foundation is one of those. We have an event tomorrow night up in Saratoga Lake. So, doing a fundraiser is stressful enough without having to worry about the weather, so I just invited anybody that needs some forecasts to let me know, and I'll help them out. And, just some other random articles about the summer solstice, whatever comes up. It's a pretty topical site in addition to a daily forecast.
And you'll probably get a few ideas on this show. Usually we go pretty far afield, so have an idea or two.
I love it. Bring it on.
All right. We were kidding around on Twitter earlier today, and I said, well, you better get your 75-day forecast together. And what, again, is the actual range where you feel pretty comfortable?
This time of year, it tends to get a little bit longer. 5 to 7 days, maybe,
good.
Which is pretty good because, as I said, in the summertime, things generally slow down. The jet stream, the polar jet, that is, lifts farther to the north, so we don't have to deal with that as often, although this June has been kind of a pain, if you will, in the middle of the month, for crying out loud. We were in the mid-60s with rain on June 16th.
Absolutely.
That is certainly not unheard of, but it's unusual because we had a dip in the jet stream. So if we can get the jet stream going into what we call a more of a zonal flow, west to east and staying north of us, that's when we get into this. And it seems like the season actually followed the calendar for a change, and we've really kind of flipped the switch into summer. We're going to be pretty warm through the week, pretty muggy, and we'll see what the weekend brings because, you know, there's a lot of graduations, graduation parties and the like for local high schools and stuff. So we'll keep you posted on that. But, hey, summer's here, man, and it's about time.
It is. Meteorologist Jason Goff is our guest. The number is 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. All right, before we get to the calls, let's play the game. You and I on this program, almost every show, touch on the fact that perception and reality with regard to weather patterns can often be very, very different.
Yes.
The wife and I discussing the weather, complaining about the weather, which is what we usually do, said, oh, God, we've had so much rain this spring. True or not true?
Not true. Ah! We've had rainy days. We've had a lot of rainy days. We have had, and I put this on my site as well, so far this year, we have had a 3-day stretch, a 4-day stretch, and a 5-day stretch with no rain. That's it.
And what about last month?
The 5-day stretch was in late January, early February, so to me, that doesn't count.
Right.
So officially, we had a trace of rain on Friday. There were a few storms to the east of us. But as we know, it was a beautiful weekend. But believe it or not, so that's the perception because you think, oh, man, this really stinks. We've had all this rain. But when you actually look at the numbers, volume-wise, we were actually a little bit below average rain and a little bit above average temperature. And I do this stuff for a living, so to speak, and I would have never guessed that.
That is so interesting. Ever. And, you know, we talk about the perception, and then you throw in 30, 40 years of time elapsed, and you say, that was the biggest storm
had. This is the worst spring. And people, you know, and it's anecdotal, you know.
Right.
Oh, every year at this event, it always rains. Well, no, it doesn't. Yeah, just got to look it up.
Jason Goff is our guest. The number is 800-348-2551. Let's take a call or two before the first break. And Brandon in Burlington, Vermont. Brandon, you're on.
Hello there. How are you? Thank you. Wonderful program. I'm amazed at weather. It's probably the most complicated thing besides the stock market that I can think of, aside from the universe. What I'm getting at is every time I turn around, there's something new that we discover. For instance, these currents that seem to be instigators of weather in the around the equator in the Pacific. You know what I'm talking about? I can't remember the exact term for them, but these currents that seemingly set up weather patterns for the whole world. Am I right?
Yes.
So I just wonder, do we know anything, or are we slowly peeling an onion?
You know what? That's the best question of all time. Do we know anything? That's great, Brandon.
That is a very good question, and it really is a kind of a peeling things back. And it does seem as though sometimes the more we know, the less we understand, to kind of rip off Don Henley, right? But it makes sense. Yeah. But I will tell you that there are some very, very intelligent men and women that are working very hard to upgrade our forecast models. Again, the weakest link in the chain here is computing speed.
Hardware.
Because there are so many variables in the atmosphere. And so the more that we kind of discover and you sort of peel that back and you think, oh, well, this is just a little variable. And then you dig into it a little bit more because with time and research, you find this and then you go, oh, man, we've got to account for this now in our forecast. And not to mention the fact, and I hate to bring this up, but let me just preface this by saying this is not an invitation to talk about global warming and climate change. This is a weather show.
Yeah.
But that is complicating things.
Absolutely.
With the warming of the polar caps in the Arctic Circle and all of that, it is causing the jet streams to do different things. At least that's the leading theory on all of that. And with that becomes even more difficult to try to nail down forecasts.
So you're changing your models as you're getting things fine-tuned.
You've got to kind of keep up on things. And, you know, with the warming temperatures that we have seen at the top of the globe, so to speak, that has really thrown a monkey wrench in a lot of these things. And, you know, while models do work on variables, there are set equations and different things that they look into. And if one of those things is off, it's the old theory or the old computer
garbage
thing,
in.
Garbage in, garbage out. So you know, the spring was difficult to forecast. As I said, it was not a nice spring. We had those kinks in the jet stream, and there are a lot of folks out there that are saying this is a function of the Arctic. Now, it's not a direct, you know, drawing a straight line. It's not going to say we're going to have this every year. But these differences that we're seeing in the jet stream could very well be tied to global warming and climate and the resultant climate change.
Jason Goff is our guest. The number is 800-348-2551. Now, you have in the past talked about some research you did in college regarding the Farmer's Almanac accuracy.
Yes.
Okay. My question for you is, given the fact that our computer modeling ostensibly has improved over the last 30 or 40 years, there's better hardware, there's better software, there are better there are more things that they take into account.
Yes.
Okay. Has anyone ever looked at how accurate forecasts were, let's say, 30 years ago compared to today?
Oh, certainly. And not only have computer forecasts improved in the last 30 or 40 years, they've improved in the last year. The global forecast system is the so-called American model. The GFS has undergone some upgrades. They just launched some things this week to continue to learn more things about water vapor content in the atmosphere, because that's a big driver in our weather. Especially when you're talking about thunderstorms, hurricanes, and things like that. But, yeah, I mean, there used to be – I'll give you a perfect example, Ray. In 1988, when the first-generation NEXRAD radars came out, the lead time in a tornado warning was 2 minutes.
Mm.
Now it's 27.
That's pretty good.
You're talking about – and I've heard estimates as high as 32. You're talking about an absolute lifetime. If you are in, let's say, a mobile home park, like those folks in Alabama just outside of Auburn – you're in a place like that, and you have 2 minutes to get out, or you have 20 minutes to get out, that is an eternity.
You bet.
So that is huge. And again, you know, it's the men and women that are working at various stages of NOAA, from the computer modeling, the satellites, the Storm Prediction Center, and everybody is working to get these things better, and we're getting more and more. They actually had, and we're waiting to see some of the data that come out of this, they managed to get a drone into a tornado a few weeks ago, and they're all fired up about that, man, because we have no...
So they got telemetry back before it was destroyed?
That's what we're waiting to see what the numbers come back
Amazing.
As. So I'm pretty stoked about that.
Jason Goff is our guest. We talk weather today. 800-348-2551 is the number. 1-800-348-2551. We'll be right back. Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff here. Our guest today, meteorologist Jason Goff. He has been talking about the weather for a long time. In fact, in our house, he is the designated weather scapegoat. When weather's bad, we blame Goff.
I can deal with that.
That's okay, man.
Yeah.
The number here is 800-348-2551. Jason's website is jasonsweather.com. Jasonsweather.com. This email came in, and then we'll jump back on the phones. This one's from Dave. Dave says, is the polar vortex variation now impacting our weather here in the Hudson Valley? If so, how?
Yes, and it always has.
Yeah.
The polar vortex, as I like to say, is a product. You know, why we're hearing about it now is a product of some dopey media consultant.
now you don't say that with any bitterness.
I don't really have a whole lot of use for those guys. Right, I just don't. But so somebody thought it would be a cool thing. It's, you know, there's the same people that started naming winter storms and crud like that. So it's just so the polar vortex has been around for a long time. It's affected the United States. It affects Europe every year, and it's just something that we have to deal with on a yearly basis. And we're actually paying a little bit closer attention to it now, kind of getting back to Brandon's call from Vermont before, because we're understanding it better, so we're able to at least have an idea that, hey, this thing is, the winds around this thing are going to slow down. There's going to be a cold outbreak, and it's either going to be in the Northeast, or it might be in the Midwest, or it might be over in Europe. We're going to check that out. So,
you know, it occurs to me that things about the business irritate you. A nice section for jasonsweather.com would be your rant Just a rant about something.
Oh, just a couple of little things.
You got management to be upset with you? No,
yeah,
you don't.
I don't
do
have
it.
To worry about that. That's a great idea, Ray Graff. I like that.
Tweet it out, and we'll all retweet it. It'll be a lot of fun.
I like that. And I'll tell you real quick, while I think about this, I started doing a thing called Tales of a Weatherman, and it just sort of chronicles the emails that I've gotten over the years.
Yeah.
And I
talk about weather scapegoat.
Oh, man. It's something to be seen. So you very well may see a page on there very soon about that.
All right, man. Let's go back to the phones. 800-348-2551. Jason Goff, our guest today, and Dave is in Latham. Dave, you're on.
Hey, I have a question I think everybody wants to know. That would be, in the Capital District here, if you want to take a week's vacation and you want the maximum sunshine, minimum rain, minimum clouds, when is the best week of what months to take your vacation? Like, if you want a summer vacation, you want a fall vacation, when is the time to do that?
So you're talking about somebody coming to visit the Capital Region. You want a week window.
Well, yeah. Or actually, even someone in the Capital Region, maybe we want to go and hike the North Salt Lake Placid Trail.
Oh, there you go. Okay.
And you're looking for a Yeah,
well, you have to go by an average here.
Yeah, it is an average, but you know, I used to get a common question like, "What is the best month to get married outside, or to, you know, to have a reception?" All that
yeah.
September
yeah.
is that month.
Really?
Yeah. So I would say, you know, if you're talking about going a little farther north, it can get a little chilly toward the end of September.
Sure
so.
Can.
You know, basically, you're looking at around mid-September, provided we don't have any issues with any remnants of tropical systems or whatever like that. Fall is really nice. Late summer into early fall is really a good time. So I would just stick a pin right smack in the middle of September and go on 7 days on either side of that, and you should be in good shape. And that's
okay.
in any given year.
We'll make it.
Right, but don't blame Jason if it rains the entire time, because you can't predict.
This is a fact. But just overall, in terms, you're welcome, sir, just in terms of that, you know, and I'm always in the minority because I love the heat and humidity, so
yeah.
I would say, you know, July and August, but September is good, and nice warm days, cooler nights, lower humidity generally, so that's your time.
You know, I was kidding around, and again, we're going back and forth on Twitter about the 75-day forecast. I wanted you to prepare it. Every now and then we'll get an email, and I'm not sure which weather organization sent them, but we get them in the newsroom, and it says the hot weather is coming to the East Coast soon, and it's going to be with us all summer. How would a prediction like that be made?
Well, you know, there are the Weather Prediction Center. There are agencies within NOAA that they put out outlooks, and they can be a few days. They can be there's an 8 to 14 day outlook. There's a monthly outlook and a seasonal outlook. Obviously, the farther out in time you go, the less reliable
You're
they
spinning
are.
The wheel.
You are, and you know, and it's not a knock on those folks. Obviously, they're doing the best they can with these forecasts, but especially with variability, and you know, this part of the country has, I would say, generally the best weather in the country in terms of we don't have to deal with a lot of, I mean, yes, we get tornadoes. Yes, we can get tropical systems.
Ice storms,
ice
snow
storms
up to my
brutal.
Navel. I mean, that's not that good.
But we don't have to worry about E5 tornado outbreaks.
Okay.
We don't have to worry about Category 5 hurricanes generally, you know, at least this far inland. So
right.
you're talking about overall, but it is also difficult to try to nail down a forecast farther out because of the variability. I mean, you know, we say it all the time, our most difficult forecasts on a small scale are the nor'easters because they are fickle. And
yeah.
that's a function of where the jet streams line up, the polar jet and the subtropical. So it's however those things kind of line up. And even in the mid-levels of the atmosphere, you can look at something even 5 days out at, say, 500 millibars and say, well, we might have a nor'easter, but we might not.
Right.
So if you can't really figure that out 5 days out, it's more difficult the farther out in time you go.
Well, you know, this forecast said end of July, you know, mid-July through August is going to be hot along the East Coast. And is it easier to predict when you get closer to water because of the mitigating factor that the water holds heat?
Well, it does, but that's sort of a separate process. I mean, yes, water does hold the heat, but as far as how that affects our weather, as I said, in the summertime is generally, if you wanted to try to have a successful, that is a verified long-term forecast, summer is really kind of the time to do it, because you can pick up patterns in these longer range models where you might get something that's called like a blocking high somewhere. And that, in essence, that's why we had the May that we had, because we had blocking at certain latitudes. We had, and so we had 12 days in a row in parts of the country where we had a lot of tornadoes and severe weather. Nothing moves.
Right.
But so that's a bad thing. A good thing is if you have something that sets up, and we have those stretches where we have, you know, 8, 10, 12 days with no rain. You know, if they can look at that and say, generally speaking, other than, you know, maybe if they get a little ripple in the atmosphere, you get some afternoon storms. But the overall, we call the long-term pattern sets up. Okay, we can deal with that. So I'm much more confident or comfortable with that from, say, July to August than I would be like January to February.
I find that really interesting and counterintuitive, and I'll tell you why after we take a call here. 800-348-2551. Jason Goff is our guest. Marianne in Albany. Marianne, you're on.
Hi. Could you explain the difference between pressures and fronts and how one would impact the other?
Well, they're sort of related. You have an area of low pressure, let's say. So now, to kind of qualify this, we have weather in the atmosphere that's going on 10 feet above our heads and 10 miles above our heads. And so we look at the atmosphere in slices. So what I'm going to talk about here is just at the surface. So we'll have an area, and today is a perfect example. We have an area of low pressure to our north with a warm front, and the warm front is really a dividing line, and you can tell the difference, certainly, you know, in days like this, when that warm front pushes through, because it is a dividing line between warmer, more humid air and cooler, less humid air. And then generally speaking, it doesn't always have to come roaring through here, but you'll have a cold front that'll trail that. But they're both sort of spun off, if you will, of that area of low pressure. And that's, you know, in this time of year, we tend to see those things when you're looking at, say, severe weather forecasting. Not that this is the case today, but you would have a situation perhaps where you had a warm front that comes through at, I don't know, 8, 9, 10 o'clock in the morning. You got some cold air aloft that's coming in behind it with that cold front. And that's the day where weather's open for business. So you've got to keep a sharp eye on that. And that colder air is more dense, so it's going to force that warmer air up. So there's lots of different things going on. I don't know, Marianne, if I answered your question. Does that make sense to you?
It's a little confusing. So does a low pressure always come from the south?
No, low pressure can actually come a lot of times for us. It'll be to the north. You can have a low that'll move up from the south.
Wait, when you say to the north, what do you mean?
To the north of us, let's say, wherever your location is. So it might be coming across, say, southern Ontario or into, you know, into Montreal or, you know, farther east into Quebec, for example. But an area of low pressure coming up from the south, that's a nor'easter, for example. And that's, I mean, that's a different animal, but it's still. So you have these areas of low and high pressure, and they just sort of move along. But we can get them coming from every which direction. But generally speaking, our low pressure systems will come from the west or from the northwest, and sometimes they'll stay north of us, and then we'll get the fronts that will come through sort of trailing those, if you will.
Where can I get more information on this so I can try to break it down in my head?
Yeah, it's...
Is there a website or something that you can go to that's good?
There are some good sites. I will tell you one site, and I don't have the exact... in my head, but look for the University of Illinois Urbana.
Ah.
They have a really nice little weather section there where you can check out all of those things. And then there's some really good explainers out there that I've seen that for explaining to kids, adults, or whoever. And I will also tell you that there's a great book, and it's been out, I don't know how many editions have been printed now, from a guy named Jack Williams, who's a writer for the USA Today. That is a fantastic weather book. It has a lot of illustrations in it, and it has a lot of really good explanations. Certainly better than the one that I just gave you.
No, that
Marianne.
Was good.
But
on
it's
the
you
spot.
Know on the radio, it's a little difficult. But those are good places to start.
All right, Marianne, thank you for the call. The number here is 800-348-2551. 800-348-2551. Jason Goff is our guest. Pressures, differentials in pressures. If the atmosphere is a self-regulating system to some extent, why are there differences in pressures?
Well, you've got a lot of different things going on. You have, and it's all, there are so many things that are interrelated. So if you have, for example, a low that'll spin up off of the Atlantic. So if we're taking a look at, let's say, a nor'easter.
Why is there a low? This is my question. Why would there be a low and then over here, 500 miles away, there's a high? Why not everything the same pressure?
Well, first of all, that's what Mother Earth is trying to do, right?
Right.
Is trying to equalize everything. So you're talking about, on a grand scale, you're talking about the rotation of the planets, of the planet, I should say. You're talking about currents in the atmosphere, that is the jet stream, currents in the water, that like the Gulf Stream, the California Current, the Labrador Current, and all of that. So what is going to happen is you are going to get opportunities for storms to form. Any area of low pressure is a cyclone. Okay, or a little storm. Some of them are tiny and you never even notice them. Others are, you know, sandy type of a deal. So what'll happen is you'll have some upper level support. Well, you'll have what we call divergence. So you're having, think about it like a big vacuum cleaner. Did you ever see the movie Spaceballs?
Sure.
When they had the big vacuum cleaner that yeah. sucked. So it's kind of like that, right? So you have different ways to get air moving up. And that can happen in any number of ways. One of those ways can even be a cold front. Now, that's, of course, spinning off of apparent low, but it's still the same idea where you have air lifting and you get these areas of lower pressure at the surface. And then you have areas of high pressure on either side. That's why you have a lot of wind with these stronger storms.
Right.
Because that air is not going to just go away and not get replaced. So you just have a lot of different mechanisms and a lot of ways to get these different pressures in different locales.
When we say low pressure and we say high pressure, what is the standard pressure? Is that 30 millibars or what are we talking about here?
You're talking about, I mean, just differences in...
What's zero? In other words, if we have...
This 1,013 millibars is kind of your standard.
Okay.
Okay.
That's where... That would be zero out the...
Kind of a net zero, yes.
So below that is low, above that is high.
Above that is high.
What's the highest pressure we've ever had on Earth?
I'd have to look that up. I mean... there have been, I know that if I remember correctly, we had what was close to a record high pressure here not too long ago. Our highest pressure generally is going to be in the wintertime, like in January,
yeah.
where you have a day that's there's not a cloud in the sky and it's like 10 degrees.
Yeah.
That's really high pressure. When you're talking about storms that are like hurricanes, so again, with that baseline of 1,013.2, when you're talking about hurricanes, then you're talking low nines.
Okay.
Even high eights. Gilbert, I think, is still the lowest. Maybe not anymore. Gilbert, 1988. I could be wrong. I think something may have replaced that since. But you're still talking about an intense storm, and it's basically just a big hole in the atmosphere, and wind is coming in to fill that in.
Our number here is 800-348-2551. Jason Goff is our guest. Let's grab another call or two before the next break. And Jim in Oneonta. Jim, you're on.
Yeah, hi. I've spent a lifetime watching weather patterns in Northeast United States. It seems to me that late winter, early spring weather used to be characterized as a battle between a Canadian low and a Bermuda high. And we had a lot of early spring storms running on the eastern seaboard. Over the past 5 to 10 years, it seems to me like that dividing line has moved maybe 100 miles west, so that a lot of those, that spring storm line is now on the other side of the Appalachians. And I wonder if Jason had any thoughts about that.
I'll tell you, I wish it was that easy, but it's not. So in the springtime, you have a transition really of going what's going on because the earth is tilted and the sun angle is getting higher in the sky and all of that. And when you're talking about the Bermuda high, what Ray and I were talking about a little while ago, where he said he had seen something that came into the newsroom here about a weather forecast from July into August. The Bermuda high is characterized as what they call a semi-permanent high. And what that thing basically does, and it got its name because it's out over the western and into the central Atlantic. So the Bermuda high is responsible largely for the weather that I love and most people don't. And that is the hot, humid weather. It'll park itself offshore of the eastern United States. It'll drive up a lot of humid, hot air from the south. And if it doesn't move, thus the term semi-permanent, that's where we're sort of stuck in this pattern. So if they're getting signals that the Bermuda high is going to migrate a little farther west and set us up for a hot summer, hey, so be it. Bring it on is what I say. Now, getting back to you.
I'm just seeing it as the Bermuda High with the ocean warming, and as a high, it's clockwise. It seems to me that those winds used to come up on the eastern side of the Appalachians, and now in the spring, that moist, warm Atlantic moisture is coming through and getting farther west, like at Georgia area, and coming up on the western side of the Appalachians, and that's where they're getting. They've gotten a lot of heavy soaking rains.
Yeah, that's
haven't got them.
That's just not a function of the Bermuda High. That's a function of more of what's going on coming from our west as opposed to the east. Especially this June was a really good example of that. Now, the high off to our east blocked that. It kept the jet stream from going straight. Instead, it was getting kinked up and wasn't able to move. And that is the problem, and that's why we were in that rather persistent pattern in May and into June. So, but as far as, you know, having, that's what I said, I wish it was that easy where you could say, oh, well, everything's just moved 100 miles. Weather is exponentially more complicated than that. I wish it wasn't, but it is.
Jim, thanks for the call. Jason Goff is our guest. His website is jasonsweather.com. The number is 800-348-2551. We'll be right back. Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff here. Our number is 800-348-2551. Meteorologist Jason Goff is our guest. His website is jasonsweather.com. One quick email here, Jason, and then we'll go back to the phones here. This one comes from Mark. And Mark writes, here in the U.S. we have hurricanes. Elsewhere in the world they have typhoons. Some places seem to suffer from cyclones. What is the exact difference between hurricanes, cyclones, and typhoons? And that's from Mark.
This is a really short answer. There is no difference.
Uh-huh.
Other than they're called typhoon when you get on the other side of the international dateline. Any area of low pressure is a cyclone. An area of high pressure is an anticyclone because they rotate in different directions, clockwise and counterclockwise. So, and a cyclone, you hear about those over in like South Asia. Typhoons will hit like the Philippines, Japan. Cyclones will hit in the Indian Ocean, you know, India and some of those spots into kind of like South Central Asia.
Yeah.
Hurricanes here, and then again, typhoons as you get over there. So that's really it. It's just a nomenclature thing, but they're all the same. Some are just bigger and badder than others.
Let's go back to the phones, 800-348-2551. Merle in Argyle. Merle.
Hey, hello.
Hello.
How you guys doing?
Good.
All right. How are you?
Not bad. I guess it's a simple but confusing question, and it's hard to describe, but the weather forecast today said a good chance of showers.
Yeah.
And then there's this forecast of rain. Is showers sort of like you might get one in Argyle, but you might not get one in Glens Falls?
Yes. Yeah, that's
and
it. It's kind of
confusing. I mean,
I agree, man.
There's a good chance of showers this morning, but
a shower
we don't get any.
Yeah, you know, you make a point.
Yeah, it is. You know, and it's difficult because and one of the reasons that I wanted to get my website up and running is that, you know, in talking to people over 20 years in television, a lot of times people will say, well, your forecasts aren't local enough. And I agree. You're right. You know what I'm saying? Like you try to get everybody involved, and it's not a one size fits all. You know, it rarely is in any season around here where you can say, hey, the weather in Gloversville is going to be the same as it is in Copaic,
yeah,
and the same as it is in Jeffersonville and up in Euphrates, wherever. So what you're talking about is when you're saying showers is basically as opposed to like a shield of rain where it's just going to rain everywhere all day. Showers tends to be more of an intermittent thing. Now, that doesn't necessarily have anything to do with the intensity of them.
They can be heavy.
They can be heavy, absolutely.
But from where Merle is standing, if Merle is in Argyle, standing out on his lawn, and it's a shower, it's rained to Merle. It's raining. What's the difference?
Well, in essence, there is no difference.
Right.
It's just it's more of a communicative thing to try to be able to get the forecast across, because I always want people to understand what it is that they've read or heard from a forecast. So when you're talking about scattered showers, you know, I wish like crazy I could say, hey, it's going to rain at 3 o'clock over Colony. It's going to rain at 5 o'clock over Fort Edward. You just can't do that in a case like this.
Once a storm is going, though, I mean, if you listen to the National Weather Service and you get an alert, the thunderstorm was near Kinderhook at 3:20, expected to be, you know, they're tracking it based on speed and direction.
Absolutely. But then you're talking about something that you can actually see going on at that time.
Yeah.
But if you're forecasting at 5 in the morning like I do, I can't tell you, you know, that all I can say is, hey, we're going to have these showers around here today, or we're going to have a steady rain moving in. Try to put some context to that. Or in a case like tomorrow, you know, we have an opportunity for some scattered thunderstorms. That means that, you know, there are going to be some storms around. I never want anybody to say, well, shoot, I better stay inside and whatever. Just make sure that you are aware of that. And that's a summertime type deal around here.
Jason Goff is our guest. Marianne is in Albany. Marianne, you're on.
Hi. I wanted to ask again the name of the book that you said was a really great book. I got cut off when you were saying it, so I didn't get it.
All right.
And it probably wouldn't hurt mentioning it again.
No, not at all. Jack Williams is the author, and I believe it's called The Weather Book.
Okay.
But if you do a search and you say Jack Williams Weather, it will pop up. And actually, Marianne, since you called, and I just pulled this up on here, when you wanted some other explanations, I was telling you about University of Illinois, Urbana-Champaign, that is. So that weather address or that web address is WW2010. So look that up.
What?
WW2010. And I'm not going to go through the whole thing here, but it's, you go WW2010. Illinois weather or something like that, and it'll pop. It's a really good site.
Okay, Marianne, thanks a lot for the call. I don't want to be a nitpicker here.
No, it's
but
okay.
Generally speaking, it's one to a customer per show. And if you miss something, you can always go back to WAMC.org and listen to the show. It's on. We put it up about 15 minutes after the show is over.
I didn't know that. That's cool.
I'm not yelling at anybody. I'm just saying that. We like to, you know.
If you miss anything.
Sometimes I forget and I put you on twice and then I look like an idiot and I don't need any help looking like an idiot, frankly. Chris in Albany. Chris, you're on.
Yes, how are you?
Good.
Hey, Chris.
Taking a call. Over the past month or two, I've noticed that the temperature around Pike's Peak in that area has been quite low, like 13, 15 degrees or so. And then maybe 800 miles south of there, it's 90. Does this have an effect on the amount of tornadoes, possibly?
Well,
that they've experienced in Texas and Oklahoma and Arkansas on the area.
No, as I said, we had this is the most active tornado season. May was the most active month we had since 2011, and that was a hideous month for tornadoes around the country. So I saw a thing last week where they had snow at about 9,000 feet in Colorado. It was coming down.
A lot of snow.
And as far as, you know, 800 miles is a long distance, man. So you're talking about coming away from the effects of the elevation and all of that. It has been, you know, we've had these upper-level storms that, as I said, they tend to generally shift farther north this time of year. This year they stayed a little farther to the south. So all of those can factor into severe weather for sure. And, you know, but it's not, you know, again, you can't, it's easier. You try to figure out and go, well, because of this and that, then this. It doesn't quite work that way. But yeah, it's been a rather active and a little bit of a different spring, to be sure.
Interesting. The tornadoes, we've had so many. And yet we've had very low numbers over several years, right?
Well, we had a lot in 2011. That was a bad year. We actually had last year set a record for a low amount.
That's what I mean.
Of tornadoes.
Yeah.
That was last year.
Right.
So, you know, on a year-to-year thing, you can look at that. But generally speaking, you know, I mean, it's to be in places that are prone to tornadoes, especially like if you lived in Oklahoma City or North Texas, you know, from Dallas up to Amherst. I mean, that's a whole different. I had a fraternity brother from Choctaw, Oklahoma.
Yeah.
And even then, you know, this is when I was 18 years old and knew everything, of course. But he, you know, we would talk about weather, and I would watch the storms, and you know, in Auburn, we're in Alabama, we get some pretty good storms in the southeast, and it was just this is a whole different mentality there.
Yeah.
First of all, people take warnings very seriously, and they will take a look and see what's going on. The weather coverage there is completely different, and it has to be, because you have storms that will fire up. I mean, people die every year from tornadoes.
Yep.
I mean, it's just the reality of the situation, and it's unfortunate, and we're trying to minimize that.
Of course, the problem is when they strike in the dead middle of the night.
That's right. But I will also tell you, this was a great year. If you want to, again, all in the proper context, there were 6 fatalities from there was a tornado outbreak. It was the end. I'm trying to remember the exact date. Around the 20th, I think, of May, somewhere in there.
Yeah.
There were 6, and these tornadoes came through at night, and there largely was a function of forecasts and then getting the word out, especially even coming from the Weather Service offices, which are, you know, these are governmental places and they have boundaries, and you had these forecasters that are there saying, basically, if you don't follow our advice, you will die.
I think some of it is the phones. I mean, I remember the first time, we don't get too many flash flood warnings where I live, but during Ike or one of them that came through, we had one. Scared the living daylights out of me. My phone went off, and I didn't even know it did that. There was a governmental alert that came through.
If something is, if they can push that stuff through, and it'll go off.
All right, let's go back to the phones here. Tom in Lakeville, Connecticut. Tom, you're on.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call. I'm a sailor, and I check a bunch of different sites for breeze and for weather, and I've just noticed there can be a pretty drastic difference across the board. And I was wondering whether those differences are because of methodology or because of data and equipment.
When forecasts are off, and again, I always say that, I mean, certainly there are few people that are more sensitive to weather and its changes than sailors. Sailors and farmers are the top two, I would guess. So, you know, you notice those a lot more. You know, forecasts are generally right and, you know, or at least close enough in that sense, a lot more than people think. I mean, that's just how we're wired, right? You hear that, you know, I worked in restaurants for a year, and you're 12 times as likely to tell of a bad restaurant experience than a good
one. Ted Williams hits 400, he strikes out in a key spot. Oh, you know,
yeah,
Ted
he
Williams
stinks,
struck
right,
out.
Yeah, that's no good. So, you know, as far as, but the times that the forecasts do go sideways, you know, it's a function of data, because we are relying on putting in data to these models that can then simulate the atmosphere, which is no small feat,
right,
as to what's going to be going on. And if something is not, for lack of a better way to put it, entered correctly, or if there's a miscalculation, a lot of times where problems will arise, and this is just a function of less data points, which is we have to do for computing speed. Again, that's a whole separate deal. You're making a lot of estimates. Mm. So, for example, you can say, all right, in Albany, it's 60 degrees. In Glens Falls, it's 48. So we can assume in Boston Spa, it's 52. Well, maybe it is and maybe it isn't.
Right.
So that's a simple example. But so it has to do with estimates. And essentially, if the right data do not come into these equations, then you can't get the right data out. You know, it's like giving somebody directions. And if you tell them, generally speaking, hey, if you want to go here, you go down here, you take a left here. But if you forget to tell them about one right-hand turn, they're hosed.
Right. Well,
that's just the way it goes.
Well put. Let's go to Michael in Pittsfield. Michael, you're on.
I'm here. Hi. Question for Jason. Knowing that you don't really want to talk about climate science, I'm just wondering if you have a long-term opinion, say 20, 30 years out, about the trend of the weather for this area, even the entire Northeast.
Yeah, and that's a great question, Michael. Let me be perfectly clear. It's not that I don't want to talk about it. It's that this is a weather show. because I want to let people know, for my own good and for everybody else's too, that global warming is happening, climate change is a result, and we as human beings are responsible for it. So we'll put that out there. As things continue on, you can see trends, and we've already seen them. And I promise this is not a shameless plug or self-promotion, but if you go to jasonsweather.com, under the weather library tab, I have a link on there called Global Warming and Climate Change. And there is a lot of really good information on there from a group in New Jersey called Climate Central. And they put out a lot of good articles. It's not any partisan junk. It's not any, this science. It is as right down the middle of the road as you can get. It is science being science.
So facts speak for themselves, yes. Basically, is what you're saying.
And you can see trends from 1950, from 1970, even from 1990, about how we've warmed up. Snowpack has gone down, and there is absolutely no reason to believe that trend is not going to continue. At this stage of the game, all we can hope is that the slope stays the same as opposed to increases. So I would check that out. And just there's a lot of interactive stuff on there that they put out where you can put in your area and it'll tell you, for example, how much warmer your nights have gotten in the last 20 years. And that has warmer nights has a large effect on water body temperatures.
All right, let's quickly grab another call or two here before we wrap it up. Andy at Canada Joe Harry. Andy, you're on.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
Good.
Hey,
I've got a question here to reinstate your comment from a minute ago. Farmers, I am a dairy farmer myself, and we watch the weather very, very closely, so you nailed that one right on the head.
Good. Glad to hear that.
I've got a question about local weather patterns. Here in the valley, I farm right on top of the valley. The river is about a mile and a half from the farm, and I have noticed over the years that the proximity to the river has caused us to have a bit more moisture in the air. The fog lingers longer in the morning as opposed to my neighbors who are a couple miles to my south and farther away from the river. I was wondering if this was a phenomenon you've seen in various places due to elevation and terrain.
Okay. You have about 30 seconds here. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, as you get closer to a body of water, you're going to be prone to fog depending on the time of year because you have differences in temperature between the air and the water. So in the springtime, you have warmer air coming over colder water. And in the fall, it's the opposite.
Yeah.
So that is going to be an effect on that. As far as elevation goes, the fog is going to tend to stay as low to the ground as it can. The bigger the difference, the thicker that is, the higher up the fog will be.
All right, Andy, that is where we will have to leave it. Jason Goff, the website once again.
Jasonsweather.com. Check me out.
All right, man. And we're going to look for that rant section, okay?
I'm going to start working on that, Ray. I think that's a good idea.
I can help you with that. I have some rants.
Okay. You'll be my consultant.
All right. Support comes from the Lake George Land Conservancy, Bolton Landing, New York, celebrating 30 years of protecting the land that protects the lake, offering more than 35 miles of trails for hiking, birding, and outdoor exploration, lglc.org. Myron Wine and Spirits, Kingston. Since 1960, a wine and spirit shop with thousands of imported and domestic wines and spirits and staff. For questions and advice, Myron Wine and Spirits on Facebook. Merritt Bookstore, Millbrook, an independent book and toy store in the heart of Millbrook, stocked for summer with gifts for grads, pools, and water toys, and summer reads. MerrittBookstore.com. And Interim Healthcare, helping people remain at home for 49 years, providing companions, aides, and nurses in the home 2 to 24 hours a day, serving the Capital Region, Columbia County, Glens Falls, and Saratoga. InterimHealthcare.com. Well, thanks again to Jason Goff for being here. Thank you for great calls. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer. Susie Chekai answered the phones. Our producer is Jim Lavoulis. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow we focus to birding, and we welcome Andy Mason of the Delaware Otsego Audubon Society. That's tomorrow at 2. Right now, stand by for the book show. We'll